I turned to see a tall, bald man, muscular in build, holding on to said woman's arm as she made a withdrawal. I flipped my cards over. That would be she. Willie threw himself a jack and then a six. He looked at Henry, who paid him no attention, and then turned over a ten. He sighed and scooped up the cards, once again depositing the bear's winnings in front of him. "You're lucky tonight." The Cheyenne Nation stacked his chips. "Yes, I am." Willie stepped back and dusted his hands together. "Would either of you gentlemen mind if I ran to the bathroom? It's right over there, and it's been a long shift." We said nothing, just watched him go. Henry, speaking under his breath, turned back to me. "You do realize that he is going to warn this Roberta Payne and friend?" I stood and reached for my coat, careful to reattach my holstered weapon as he joined me in putting on his black leather duster. "I'm counting on it." We watched as Willie slipped behind the cashier booth through a door beside the cash machines. With one quick look back at us, he spoke through the cage to the couple at the ATM, opened another door, and allowed them inside. We hustled across the floor, only to find that the heavy security door was fashioned with a large metal keyboard. I leaned back and motioned toward the man in the cashier booth. "Hey, would you mind?" There was a thunderous crash, and I looked back and saw that the Cheyenne Nation had decided not to wait for approval and had acquired egress with a size 12 Caterpillar chuckaboot. He extended his hand. "After you." We two at a time dipped down the steps and were immediately confronted with the hall. "You go that way and I'll go this. First one to find something, sing out." He nodded and disappeared to the left. I moved quickly to the right, finding another door which read Women's Dressing Room. I turned the knob, but it was locked. I was about to do a bear when a young woman in one of the waitress outfits opened it and then stepped back, her hand to her chest. "Oh, my God!" "Excuse me." I started to go around her, but she held up her arm. "This is the women's dressing room." "I know, and I'm looking for a woman. Roberta Payne?"
"Never heard of her."
The arm stayed on the door.
"And you can't come in here."
I pulled out my badge wallet. "Yep, I can." I pushed past her and across the room. I could see another door hanging open and moving. I threw what my father had called my field voice over my shoulder. "Henry!" Hoisting myself up the steps, I threw the door open into the snow-covered alley behind the casino, which, with the proximity of the surrounding buildings and the thickness of the fog, felt claustrophobic. I cranked my hat down tight and looked at the ground, where three sets of tracks went to the left toward the middle of town. I felt the breath of someone next to me. "They are together." "Yup." I stepped back and let the expert take over the tracking duties, watching as his left shoulder humped up and his right hand hovered over the ground like it always did when he was bird-dogging, and he loped off down the alley. I tried to keep up, but was at a disadvantage, running with the leather soles of my cowboy boots in comparison with the vibram ones of his boots. At least, that's what I told myself. We tracked them two blocks, but then the bear pulled up and stood at Lee Street, the snow already covering his raven-black hair like the mantle of silver on a grizzly. "They split up." "Why in the heck would they do that?" The streetlight flared off the surfaces of his face. "Two cars. There are two major parking areas in town, one over by Deadwood Creek and the public parking garage on Wall Street. The croupier went toward the creek, and the couple went toward the garage."
"She's the one we want. We'll find out about the dealer later."
The bear turned and was off again, trying to catch a glimpse of Roberta Payne in the freezing fog.
"They are fast."
"Yep." He shook his head as we hurried across the empty street, the snow now approaching lower mid-calf.
"Try and keep pace."
Henry broke into a run, and I struggled to keep up as he took to the sidewalk. I just ran down the middle of the street. It was strange to see the usually busy little town like this, almost as if we were ghosts, haunting the place with our muffled, silent run. I saw Henry pause and then take a left on Wall toward the parking garage. Sliding a good 6 feet on the smooth soles of my boots, I made the turn too and lumbered after the Cheyenne Nation, almost running into him at the empty glass booth at the entrance. He stood, looking up, staring at the concrete ceiling and the floors above.
"What?"
"Someone was trying to start a car."
I looked at the two passageways on either end of the massive building that stretched most of the length of the town.
"You take in and I'll take out. Working our way to the roof?"
He nodded, and was off to the right as I moved left. looking at all the cars as I went, hoping to spot exhaust, movement, or the condensation that would tell me somebody was inside. There were more than a lot of vehicles, evidently guests from the surrounding hotels and employees who had given up the ghost had decided to just leave their vehicles in the safety of the garage for the night. There was a Toyota pickup at the far end, sitting by itself, with the motor running. Just to be on the safe side, I pulled my badge wallet from my rear pocket and held it open, placing my other hand on the 45 at my side as I approached the driver of the small truck and noticed that it was ever so slightly rocking. I drew my coat back over my sidearm and walked a little forward where I could see a woman sitting on a man's lap. I had just started to move back when the guy saw me and screamed, honestly, screamed. Then the woman started screaming, and I held up my hands. She slid to the side, and the middle-aged man rolled down the window and started yelling at me. "What the hell do you think you're doing?" I put a finger to my lips. "Shh!" I then held up my badge and whispered loudly, "Get a room!" The window went back up, and I was able to get past before he threw it in reverse. I turned up the ramp leading to the second floor. At the top, I looked down the length of the building and sighed through chattering teeth. I was cold. It was late, and I was really tired. I started working both sides of the street, so to speak, and was halfway done when I saw Henry skimming along like a black panther, stooped and crisscrossing the lane just as I was. I shook my head and thought about the best buddy I had in the world, a man ready to drop everything in his life and rush out into a blizzard to help me try and catch a missing woman. We met halfway, well, maybe a little more on my side. "Anything?"
"No, you?"
"A couple lap dancing in a Toyota."
"I heard somebody pull out and assumed you had it."
He blew into his bare hands in an attempt to warm them.
"Did you do your civil duty and tell them to get a room?"
"I did." He glanced around in the darkness of the garage.
"We could just wait at the exits, but you might freeze to death."
"I'm ready to just go back to the casino and see if they've got an address for Willie or either of them." He looked at the ceiling.
"In my experience, employees are usually relegated to the most inconvenient parking areas, so if they are friends of his..."
"Up?"
I joined him in looking at the ceiling, and he nodded. "I'll double back."
On the third floor, there were fewer cars, and I was able to make better time, but didn't see Henry as I got toward the middle. I kept going, finally approaching the ramp that he should have come up when I heard somebody running on the floor below. "Henry?" His voice echoed up to me.
"They're in the elevator."
I ran for the steps at the southeast end of the building. Fortunately, there was no snow in the stairwell, but I could already hear Henry and the couple on the street below. Throwing myself against the walls, I bounced my way down, turned the corner at the ticket booth, and tripped off the curb just enough to send myself slinging onto the snow-covered street outside. Picking myself up on one elbow, I could see the bear climbing up the fire escape at the back of a three-story red-brick building to my left, and above him, barely visible in the cascading flakes, two people going onto the roof. "Damn it!" I grabbed my hat and pushed off, running the length of wall back down to Main, keeping my eyes on the rooftops and sliding another 10 feet into the main thoroughfare. Holding my hat in front of my eyes to give me a clearer view, I could see that there was a large turret on the corner building, and I could barely make out the shadow of somebody looking down from the front cornice. I shouted up at her, "Roberta Payne, Sheriff's Department, you need to stop!" She looked both ways and then behind her as the man yanked her away. "Whatever your name is, you need to let her go!" He ignored me, and they both disappeared. I moved sideways down the street, keeping an eye on the roof and trying to see, even though the falling snow was blinding. After a moment, Henry appeared at the cornice.
"Where did they go?"
"Not this way. They..." It was then that I saw something move on the roof of the next building, a full flight lower than the corner one that Henry was on. I pointed and yelled at the bear, "They're down there! They must have jumped!" The Cheyenne Nation flung himself from the taller building, but I couldn't see if he'd landed well or not. Running sideways and hoping to spot a taller building that might impede their rooftop progress, I tried to keep up but watched as the couple made an easy traverse onto the next three buildings, with me sliding along in my boots, desperately trying to keep pace on the ground. Suddenly, I noticed that a half-ton pickup with its bright lights blasting up Main Street had stopped about 50 yards away. Bringing my hand up to shield my eyes, I peered through the fog freezing in the snow-filled air and finally figured it must be Willie. I stood there for a few seconds, unsure of his intentions, when he revved the engine, lurched forward, and headed straight for me. For all Willie knew, he was protecting the couple from a wild cowboy and Indian duel who might mean them harm. I would have liked to have shown my badge, but there wasn't time. Carefully, I pulled the Colt from my holster and leveled it at the rapidly approaching vehicle. The truck stopped when I guess Willie figured out what he was up against. I took a step forward and raised my sidearm just to show him I wasn't intent on putting a bullet into him and yelled, "Absaroka County Sheriff's Department!" Unsure if he'd heard me, I yelled it again. That's when he hit the gas and started straight toward me again. Unwilling to be run over, if by mistaken identity or not, but not wanting to hurt the driver, I fired low, figuring I would hit the front of the truck on something that would disable it. The brakes locked up, and the truck slid at an angle to my right. Tugging at my hat, I leaned my head to one side and tried to see in the cab to make sure the bullet had not deflected, but the snow and the reflection on the glass made it impossible. Suddenly, the wheels started spinning, and I raised my sidearm again, only then noticing that the truck was retreating once again at a high rate of speed. He backed the vehicle into a parking lot at the end of the row of buildings, and as I ran after him, I saw Roberta and the unknown man leap onto the one-story building at the end of the row, swing around a billboard advertising the newest, biggest, and best of something, and lightly jump to the ground next to the vehicle in waiting. I was getting closer, but watched helplessly as they vaulted into the attacking pickup, which fishtailed out of the parking lot and headed off in the other direction, the billowing tunnel of snow in their wake closing off the air behind them. Their taillights disappeared as the bear dropped to the ground, both of us leaning over with our hands on our knees in an attempt to catch our collective breath. He caught his before I caught mine, of course.
Who knew we were chasing Spider-Man and Spider-Woman?
I nodded and stooped to see a little antifreeze in the snow. I must have dinged the radiator, as another set of lights suddenly appeared from the other direction, along with a spotlight that blinded us. A voice rang through a loudspeaker mounted in the grill of a black-and-white Dodge Charger. Static.
Deadwood Police, don't move!
Standing and holding my .45 high and wide so we wouldn't get shot, I shouted, "Sheriff Walt Longmire, Absaroka County, Wyoming!" I gestured toward Henry with a smile. "Come on, we've got a ride."
"Follow what car?"
I'd gotten to say follow that car only one other time in my life, and the young patrolman was ruining the expectations I had with my second request. It was a half-ton pickup, blue in color, headed east on Main. Tavis Bradley, who had turned out to be a part-time patrolman with the Deadwood Police, had cost us more than part-time trying to figure out who we were and what we were doing, but had finally fallen in line and started the warm, if not hot, pursuit in his completely useless in the snow Charger.
"I called them in even though you didn't have a plate number."
The car slid sideways as we joined routes 14/85 south, and I wished once again that I had been driving.
"There can't be that many vehicles out here tonight."
"Turn your headlights on low, please."
The bear, seated in the front seat with Tavis, peered over the hood at the surface of the road.
"It is fast disappearing, but there is one clearly defined set of tracks."
The young man did as he was told.
"He's headed on a Sherman toward Cliff, but my jurisdiction ends where 385 branches off and goes south to Custer and the State Park."
I leaned over the seat. "We're going to broaden your horizons tonight."
"Shouldn't we call the highway patrol? They've got a detachment in Custer and in Rapid City and can cut them off."
"Get them on the wire." As the kid snatched the mic from his dash and talked to the HPs, Henry and I watched the road and tried to figure out what had happened in Deadwood.
"I don't get it. Why split up?"
The bear pointed, urging the patrolman to go left. I thought about it. "I can understand if you decided to change your life and hide out."
"Well, in all honesty, I can't, but was she acting as if we were going to kill her, or he was?"
He turned, giving me his usual horse eye.
"I'm voting that she fears him much more than she does us."
The patrolman hung up the mic and glanced back at me through the rear view.
"They're setting up cars on 44, 16, and 385, so he can't go south. and he can't get over to Rapids, so can I slow down?
No, there are other roads he can take, right?
Small ones?
Well, we're going to keep after him while we can still see his trail, or else we might lose him to those small ones.
Tavis looked glum. If I wreck this new cruiser, the chief is going to lose me.
Who's your chief?
Emil Fredrickson.
I laughed. Fighting Freddy?
You know him?
Yep, I worked with him a couple of times back in the day, when I used to moonlight the Sturgis bike rally.
The bear spoke out of the side of his mouth. Dare I ask how he got the name?
I shook my head, thinking back to a time when I was a struggling deputy with a wife, a child, a mortgage, and a car that needed a transmission. Oh, every time some tough guy would say that Emil was just a tub of guts, and that if he took off his badge and gun they'd kick his ass, he'd take off his badge and gun and kick their ass. I think his badge and gun got more wear from being thrown onto his dash. In any other circumstance, it would have been a wonderful drive through one of the most beautiful and, according to the Indians, spiritual places in the world. But with the snow and fog, it was like driving underwater. I had the kid shut off the lights on the light bar, except for the warning ones at his rear, just so that if the SDHPs were out here moving around, they wouldn't back-end us.
Why no lights?
Henry can't see. I watched the road for a few seconds, then tried to make out the signs, but they were enameled with snow. Any idea where we are? I was talking to Henry, but Tavis answered,
Just south of Hill City, I think.
He turned in the seat and looked at the bear.
You Sioux?
Lakota. Some, but mostly Cheyenne.
I never met a Cheyenne before.
The silence of the vehicle got to the kid, and before long he spoke again.
How about telling us a story? I mean, the sheriff and me have been talking the whole way.
Henry nodded.
I know.
Well, tell us a story, an Indian story, to help pass the time.
The Cheyenne Nation glanced at him, then back at me, and then at the road.
You may not like my stories.
The kid wouldn't give it up.
What, do all the white people die in the end?
No, only white people's stories end with everybody dying. He sighed and then smiled to himself. There was an Indian and a Veohoi traveling together.
What's a Veohoi?
I joined the conversation.
White person.
The bear continued as if we hadn't spoken.
These two were on a hunting trip, but they were not doing very well, when suddenly a duck flew out of some rushes, and the Indian shot it with an arrow at the exact same time as the Veohoi shot it with a gun.
Henry's hands came up, gesturing as he warmed to the story.
They plucked the bird and made a fire, burying the duck in the ashes so that they could eat it the next morning. As they were going to sleep, the Veohoi made a wager, telling the Indian that they should sleep well tonight and dream, and whoever had the best dream in the morning would be the one to eat the duck. I had heard this story numerous times. The next morning the Veohoi awoke very early, but when he looked at the Indian, he could see his eyes watching him, and so the Veohoi said, I have had a marvelous dream. The Indian, seeing his enthusiasm, allowed him to tell of his vision first. In my dream, there were winged white women who came down from the sky, who promised me everything forever if I would only join them in heaven. But I explained to them that I did not have wings, so they lowered a ladder down for me, and I began climbing up. The Indian jumped to his feet and pointed at the Veohoi and agreed. I have had this same vision, a dream so powerful, so vivid, that it must be shared by more than one person. The Veohoi nodded. It was as if it actually happened. Yes, I saw you climb up the ladder and disappear. The Veohoi, sensing he had won the bet, exclaimed, Yes. The Indian continued to nod. So I ate the duck.
It was quiet in the cruiser as the bear returned his hands to the dash and his attention back to the road. The kid finally spoke up.
That's the end?
The Shan Nation's voice echoed off the windshield.
Yes.
Well, that sucked.
For the Veohoi, yes.
Henry smiled.
I told you you would not like the story.
For the sake of peace among the races, I tapped the kid's shoulder and asked,
You from around here, troop? Sioux Falls, but they weren't hiring this time of year.
How long have you been on the job?
4 weeks. Got my criminal justice degree from Black Hill State.
What made you want to be a police officer?
I just want to help people, right?
The bear looked at him again, and I slapped Henry's shoulder to get him to knock it off, the back of my fist making a loud smacking noise against the black leather.
Right.
Henry's voice rose with his finger.
Left.
The kid turned to look at him.
What?
Left. Turn left.
Right.
He did as he was told, but after a moment he spoke again.
What is it that this woman's done?
I rested my chin on my arm. Disappear, but the problem is that a couple of other women have had the same thing happen to them, and I'm hoping that she might be able to connect some of the dots for me. That, and I've got a dead sheriff's investigator to throw in the mix.
How did he die?
Suicide.
The bear raised a fist like a mace.
To serve and protect, right?
I hit him in the shoulder again. The kid looked at me.
How long have you been a sheriff?
I shrugged.
About as long as you've been alive. Some quiet time went by, and then there was a little edge to the young man's voice.
So, what about you?
Henry shook his head.
What about me, what?
Are you a cop?
The bear smiled.
No, I am freelance.
The tone was still there when he asked the next question.
So what do you think we are?
The Cheyenne Nation didn't look at either of us when he responded with a philosophy the young patrolman would develop sooner or later if he lived that long.
Consequence.
You could hear all of us breathing in the cruiser as we tracked along in the deep snow.
Consequence is what we all are.
Chapter 9.
Stop.
Tavis hit the brakes. We began a slow and agonizing slide, and the cushion of snow finally coming to rest at a diagonal blocking both lanes. We'd been driving for what seemed like an hour, following the only set of tracks on the road, and all I could think was how embarrassing it was going to be if we were trailing a garbage truck. The young patrolman and I sat still as Henry leaned forward, looking past the kid through the driver's side window farther down the road.
What?
He gestured.
No more tracks.
I leaned back, wiping the fog from the inside of the window, and even though I was unable to do much about the outside, I could see that the bear was right and that the road ahead was pristine and undriven.
The road less traveled? They must have turned off.
I patted Tavis on the shoulder. Can you get her to turn around and go back? He nodded.
I think so.
As he tried, I scoured the outside to try and get my bearings. Shouldn't we have met up with one of the highway patrol roadblocks by now?
Seems like, but maybe they're just a little farther.
He pulled the cruiser ahead in an arc, and we slowly started back up the invisible road.
How could you see that there were no more tracks?
The Cheyenne Nation shrugged.
Did not see it. I felt it. And heard it. The snow feels and sounds different when it has not been driven on.
He raised a hand again.
Stop.
We slid and then rocked back and forth like a moored boat as the bear unclicked his seatbelt.
They went off the road here.
I looked out my window. That's a road? Henry shook his head.
I cannot tell, but that is where they went.
I tapped Tavis's shoulder. How about it, troop?
What if it's not a road?
Then we're probably going to sink this charger like a U-boat.
I'd rather not do that.
I raised the collar on my coat and tugged down my hat. Then we leave it where it's more likely to be damaged and walk. He shook his head.
I'm not leaving this unit.
Henry gestured toward the supposed road.
That, too, is a choice.
Without warning, and I guess to show us that he, too, was 10 feet tall and bulletproof, the kid spun the wheel and hit the gas. The big motor on the Dodge leaped at the opportunity and literally pounced into the tracks of the pickup, only to sink with a muffled thump like the plumping of 4 very large pillows. I leaned forward between them and looked at the bear.
What did that sound like to you?
He pursed his lips.
That we are, beyond even the slightest shadow of a doubt, stuck.
Tavis threw the cruiser in reverse and stomped on the accelerator before either of us could advise him against it. The charger spun its wheels and, if possible, dug itself in deeper.
Shit!
He turned to look at us.
Looks like we walk after all.
Shit!
Henley pushed open his door and climbed out.
My sentiments, exactly.
Want to open the door for me? There aren't any inside handles back here.
Tavis got out on the other side and trudged back up to the road.
Shit!
He stood there and looked both ways.
I have no idea where we are.
Henry looked around with me and then pointed toward something hanging in the fog.
Is that a sign?
The patrolman walked toward it and slapped the pole with his hand, whereupon the majority of the snow slid off on top of him.
Shit!
He shook most of it off and then looked up and read the sign.
Aw, more than shit!
I stooped and shone my flashlight on the tracks, which illuminated a few drips of coolant in the snow.
What? It's 16.
Meaning? Zipping up his duty parka, he walked back toward us.
We're between the main roads leading to either Rapid City or Custer.
He looked around at the 20 feet that were visible.
Probably somewhere in Custer State Park.
I guess we're lucky he didn't go to Mount Rushmore. I joined the young man. Are there any structures around, lodges they may be trying to get to?
There are a few, Bluebell and Legion Lake lodges, maybe. But I'm not sure where they are in this soup.
He quickly added, I've only been here once when I was a teenager, and we stayed at the State Game Lodge.
I remember it because there was a photograph of Grace Coolidge holding a raccoon, and she was a looker.
A raccoon?
Yeah, it was the summer White House, and she had this pet raccoon. I thought that was kind of weird, right?
I glanced at Henry, who shook his head and then nodded toward the two depressions leading into the whiteout. We better get moving before the tracks fill in. Henry and I took a few steps in that direction, but I noticed the kid wasn't following. So I stopped and turned to look at him.
You coming? He shook his head. I told you, I'm not leaving this vehicle.
The bear's voice sounded from out of the wall of white, muffled by the frozen condensation.
I do not think anyone is going to be able to take it without a tandem of tow trucks.
I stood there for a moment longer, and then turned and followed the bear.
Call the HPs and tell them where we are, would you?
Right.
I could hear him crunch toward the cruiser, but then stop.
Hold on! Let me get them on the radio and then get the keys.
It was slow going. I was monkey in the middle, with the Cheyenne Nation ahead and the puffing patrolman behind me.
How far can they get?
It was as if our voices were being struck by the tiny particles of snow and then steadfastly driven to the ground. Personally, I didn't feel like talking, but the kid was nervous, so I tried to make an effort.
Hard to say, but he's got four-wheel drive. If there's a road around here, he's got a better chance, but I'm betting that he's going to get stuck like we did, or his radiator will drain out and he'll burn up the engine.
We huffed along for a while longer, but then he spoke again.
Do you think the other guy is dangerous?
I don't know. Either dangerous or stupid or both.
Why is that?
I pulled up and he almost ran into me.
Would you be out here doing this without the right gear if you had any choice?
No. Smart boy. I started off again but couldn't see the bear.